This morning's address is about scapegoating. In the early years of the Christian faith, the Jewish scriptures were incorporated into this new faith system. And this was done because at the time, historic texts were held in esteem and they were used to give legitimacy to the new religion. A mistake the Christian church went on to make was to read those Jewish texts literally and to accept the content as being historic fact. There is a difference, of course, between how Eastern and Western people approach stories. Westerners have a scientific mindset, and when we hear a story, we ask, did it happen? When did it happen? Where did it happen? Show me evidence for its happening. The Eastern approach to stories is to ask, what is the meaning of the story? What can this story tell me about my life? So when we read the Old Testament, we should ask, what does the story mean? And of course, the wonderful thing about these stories is that there's no correct interpretation. The stories are the distilled wisdom gathered over many generations from people's lived experiences. And before the discovery of writing, we know that those stories would have changed in reaction to ongoing events and conditions. And although the stories may seem outdated to us, they do have useful things to tell us if we just open our minds and listen. The Jewish book of Leviticus is not a typical Bible story. Leviticus contains the commandments God gave to the Jews that they were required to live by. To break any of these rules meant breaking the covenant between God and the Jewish people. Now, given the number of God-given rules, there are over 360 of them, and the inevitability of human nature to keep rules, of course there needed to be a way of restoring the relationship between God and his people. And chapter 16 of Leviticus sets out to tell the Jews how to obtain forgiveness for their transgressions. And this is what they were to do. Once a year, the people gathered in community. The priest purified himself. He put on sacred garments. He offered sacrifice for the forgiveness of his sins and made an offering to God. So only when the priest was purified did he address forgiveness on behalf of the people. And the ceremony obviously was held with the full authority and power of the Jewish religious rulers in the presence of the entire community. Then two male goats were selected. It was decided by lot which goat would be die as a sacrificial offering on behalf of the community. The destiny of the other goat was to be the scapegoat. Now, the dictionary says that a scapegoat is a person or a group made to take the blame for others. So the other goat was destined to take the blames for the sins of the community. The priest laid his hand on the goat's head. He metaphorically laid the sins of the community on the goat. And then the goat was brought to the wilderness and set loose. It's easy to imagine that when the goat was brought away, that afterwards the community would have celebrated. They could feast on the unused parts of the burnt offerings, and they were now happy that they were in good relationship with God. The community was free of sin. And when the community was free of sin, God would prosper the community. That's the story. And that story has me thinking. I was thinking, which goat was the luckier? Now, the goat that was made sacrifice would have been dispatched immediately, but humanely. How did the scapegoat fare? In the wilderness, did the goat die of starvation in isolation? Or did he join a herd of goats and live to be the father of many generations of goats? We don't know, we're not told. And I find it interesting that it was a goat, the least valued of all the farm animals, that was destined to suffer because of the community's sins. It wasn't a sheep or a bull. When the priest listed the community's transgression, I wondered, did the priest work from a formula or a list that he had made, or had he spent the year watching everyone for their transgression during that time? Did some members of the community cringe when they heard their transgression read aloud? Did some of them breathe a sigh of relief when theirs was missed? The story of the scapegoat is thousands of years old, at least 3,000. And we regard it as something primitive, people gathering to do that. It's not a service we would hold today in modern society. But I think we still make our scapegoats. I see echoes of scapegoating in many public modern events. Not formally done, but it happens. Irish history has many stories that we could call scapegoating. Single mothers, the children of single mothers, children whose only crime was the poverty of their parents, people who are unfortunate enough to suffer mental health issues. These were people who were sent to institutions in view of the community, but isolated from that community by high walls that the community didn't go inside and the people inside did not come out from. Their shared commonality was that they were powerless. Like the Israelites of old, the community felt that somehow the right balance had been restored to the community when some members were excluded. Because people knew those institutions were there. I know as children, my father would threaten my brothers with the reformatory in Dangan. They knew that wasn't a good place. There have been, of course, a reckoning for past mistakes. And a formula seems to have developed for the process. Survivors somehow find the strength to tell their story. And their strength gives them power. And seeing the individual and hearing their stories changes public perception. Because at one time, these things, mental illness, having children when you weren't married, they were scandals, according to the times. When they begin to tell their stories, they're no longer sinners unfit to live among the community, but people just like us. But people maybe a little bit less fortunate than us. The government will commission a report, and to assuage our communal conscience, they'll arrange a compensation package. And sometimes even the Taoiseach will offer a public apology. The Taoiseach Enda Kenny's, at the time, his dole apology to victims of clerical abuse was probably his most remembered speech. I can't think of any other speech I'd ever made. Remember that one. He reflected the public mood. He had spoken for the people. This is a danger that we create and make scapegoats of other people. Of course, one clerical abuser in a church is one far too many. However, the majority of members of the Irish clergy did keep their vows. They did live the Christian message. And now these elderly, mainly gentlemen, have become modern-day scapegoats. Most of them live in isolation. They're afraid to appear in public in clerical garb. They are our new scapegoats. More recent one, the Stardust Fire, this is a very recent example, is another example of scapegoating in a way. For 40 years, 3 years, the victims were officially labelled arsonists. In death, their memory was scapegoated because of the failure of others, the owners of that building, the fire inspectors, the security guards. And suddenly it seems that the public opens its eyes to the truth. Suddenly everybody is saying, how come they had to wait 43 years for the truth to come out? And that story is repeated at the moment in the UK, where submost postmasters became the scapegoats for failure of computer experts and senior management at the post office. And yet for more than 20 years, they were trying to highlight the stories and very few people were interested in hearing them. It was only that Lord Arbuthnot who had the grace and the courage to do it, but he was in the minority. And one TV programme changed the whole thing and suddenly everybody's eyes is open to injustice meted out to postmasters. Scapegoating, so I think, is still alive. Scapegoating happens when people are powerless and two people who are powerless. The people living in public spaces, in tents in our city, are scapegoats in waiting. I know there is a housing shortage in Ireland. There is an unprecedented number of people seeking asylum in our country. And I know that the government can't magic homes from nowhere. And I am as conflicted as everyone else when I see or dare to make myself look at those tents. And I don't have a solution to that problem. I know I have to try and see the person living in the tent, the human being, someone just like me. Some time ago, I chatted to someone who has worked all her life with homeless people for more than 40 years. This is what she told me. She says, all of my life working with the homeless, they divide into two groups. She said, when I started, there was them and us. One were country people who were homeless, the other were city people. City people felt that the country people had no right to come to Dublin to be taking stuff that was rightfully Dubliners. And the country people felt that those smart city slickers were far more in the know and got more than these poor ignorant country people. She said, now there are still two groups. Now there are Irish people and non-nationals. And they both say the same about the other. Those Irish people know the system, they get everything, and the non-nationals have no business being there taking what is theirs. This is human nature. I think we're inbuilt to scapegoat. I chatted with this woman and we talked about, should you or shouldn't you give money to someone begging in the street when there's an obvious drug problem or a drink problem? Are you just better to give it to a charity? and they will take 20% of it in administration costs, or do you give it to the person who probably will go out and buy drink or drugs with it? And she made a very excellent response. She said, "That's not something I can tell you what to do about." She said, "Whether or not you give money is your choice. But," she says, "please just don't ignore them." She said, "Try saying hello to the person, to look at them, say hello to them, and then decide whether or not you give something." We are all human beings, alive for a short time. We share the planet. But the day will come when we will leave everything behind us. Everything we, as we say, worked hard and deserved, our most treasured possessions, we leave them all behind. They're not ours. We don't own this place. Ireland is not ours with label on it. This belongs to the Irish. The other thing is, let's look out for scapegoats. Those meant to suffer for the wrongdoing of others. And make sure that we never become someone who creates scapegoats. Amen.